The thing is not how you are on your best days, how can you step up on your worst day? When everything is going terrible, when you're tired, when you're frustrated, when you're edgy, how do you treat other people?
Fuck pain, fuck heartbreak. I'm still in love with life.
From the multicultural headquarters of the future capital of the free-thinking states of America known as Los Angeles, this is the Drunken Taoist Podcast. On this episode, songwriting coach, eternal optimist, and he who may be the great hope for French national cricket, Jamie Coo joins us as he tells us all about how he helps songwriters dial in their songs to connect with an audience, as well as the awesome advice to practice so that you're ready for when that elusive luck finally arrives. And let's try to avoid that terrible human habit of thinking ourselves out of so many things before we even try. Here we go.
And now, asking you all to spread the words that corporations are not persons, I'm Rich Evers. And my partner in crime, the savage philosopher and middle finger of the gods, Daniele Bolelli. As we invite you to lower the lights, batten down the hatches, and prepare to open your mind. For the Drunken Taoist Podcast begins now.
Welcome back, everybody. Another fine episode of the Drunken Taoist Podcast, episode 253. Spring has sprung in Ojai. It is quite lovely here. And next to me, as always, my pal, Daniele Bolelli. Hello.
Yes, indeed. Let's go play. Today, we have as a guest, Jamie. I want to say last name,
That's what it looks like.
Something. Sorry, Jamie. I suck at pronouncing anything, and your last name is no exception. So, apologies.
We could do some possibilities. It could be Coop.
That could be good.
Coupe?
Yes.
So, give me a few of them.
Coup, as in counting coup.
Yeah.
Or, there's. Okay, I'm kind of stuck there.
Stuck in a coop?
Yes.
Like a chicken coop?
Yeah. But in any case, we shall start this conversation very soon. Before we do that, couple of shout outs. As usual, our guys who have been around forever, and am I wearing one of their t-shirts today? No, actually today I'm not, but usually I am. I was yesterday. Shore Design t-shirts, we love them. They make the softest t-shirts on the planet, so you know the drill. Check them out. Shout out to PurestMushrooms.com. I love these guys. Both of the main guys from Purest Mushrooms are former guests of the Drunken Taoist. They sell like 5 different kinds of medicinal mushrooms: lion's mane, cordyceps, chaga, turkey tail, and reishi. I've tried at least 3 of them that had really good results. Couple I didn't feel much, but like probably I didn't need it. Cordyceps were amazing. Lion's mane was good and turkey tail was gold.
And you're not clicking. So
I'm that's not clicking like The Last of Us. So if you want to check them out, purestmushrooms.com, use the code HISTORYONFIRE at checkout for a discount on single packages. I really like it, for real. Like, I'm not bullshitting you guys. So if you wanna check them out, and if you do, let me know what you think. That would be awesome. Also, shout out to DakotaPureBison.com. The code HOF10 gives you a 10% discount on any of the bison-based products that they produce. They are all fantastic, from steaks to burgers to anything else you can think of. DakotaPureBison.com, code HOF10. And of course, the biggest shout-out of all to the sweet folks parting with their hard-earned money to support us.
Let the pottering begin.
In today's version, that would be Donald Chipwitten, Daniel Fischel, Paul Donato, Ryan Merklin, Keegan Walsh, Nick Zunick, Aistis Juska, Joel Bigman, Joseph Lord, Nicola Togni, GlobalHobos.com, Andre Garapetian, Eden Cario, Samuele Rudelli, Stephen Rados, Lane Raper. You guys are awesome.
And way too kind.
Yes, we deeply, deeply appreciate it. You are what keeps the light on around here. And speaking of keeping the lights on, if you want to use our Amazon link, that's always another easy way to help us that doesn't cost you an extra cent. Having said all that, we're ready to roll?
Yeah, away we go.
Let's do this. Jamie, it's your birthday. Let's start with that.
Ooh. 29 today, so it's been a pretty cool gift to have this. I want to introduce something to you guys that maybe is controversial. It's an idea that I want to have tested and have thought about, especially people listening to this. I would love to hear if this is not applied. So I'm trying to break down the idea and the myth of luck.
Okay.
Because I, as a kid, when I was trying to get into the music industry, trying to start in any way or fashion, you would always hear, they got lucky.
Yeah, of course.
We're all into film, we're all into entertainment. And you go, what does that really mean?
Yeah.
And I think aside from people who have so much money, they can change the equation completely.
But still doesn't work.
But still doesn't work. In what way?
You can have all the money, but if you're not talented.
There you go. This is part of it. So
you'll be forgiven for a little while, but eventually be like, I'm not wasting
one more. People won't turn up again, right?
No, there's no way.
The equation for me is, how do I give, like is actually your daughter, how do you give someone who's coming into the music industry or entertainment industry or anyone in any career, mm-hmm. how do you give them an actual formula to work on luck?
Hmm.
So for me, this is how I see it, and I'd like you to change it if you think it's shit. Okay.
So let me get this one thing straight. So the idea being like, how do you, because ultimately luck is luck, but how do you massage the odds so that luck is more likely to want to knock on your door rather than pass by?
Well, how do you give yourself every chance outside of the idea of the serenity prayer if there are truly things outside of my control?
Sure, of course.
Practice.
Yeah.
That's half, exactly. So if you take half of it, essentially, it's preparation, I call it, and that's broken into practice, proof, and pressure. So if you're a songwriter, you spend your hours practicing. And my job is people practicing efficiently, much like a personal trainer. Take this in sport as well.
Yep.
How many hours you spend, the Malcolm Gladwell, 10 to 12, whatever, what skills you have. The next is prove it. Can you prove it? Okay, Rich, okay, you're great at this thing. Can I see a video of it?
Absolutely.
There we go. You send me a video. And the final thing is pressure. Can you recreate your best song under pressure with the studio, people staring at you, artists comfortable with? You do it under pressure. The beauty is that then loops around again, because when you're under pressure, you're practicing again. So that's the cycle. But to me, I see it as that is only half of the game. If we take success, achievement, overcoming something, having a career as the 100%, the luck idea, 50%, a maximum 50%, is how good you are.
Luck happens when preparation meets opportunity.
Exactly. The other half is opportunities. But I've even started to think of it more, particularly because of my background and even sitting here today is somewhat proof of it. It's more like relationships. So the other 50% opportunities, but really relationships. It's people. Yep. And you break that down even simply into personal network, professional network, and digital representation and or network. Mm-hmm. Your kind of digital ghost. And to me, the idea is simply that you can be as good as you want at something that's only ever half the game. Mm-hmm. And truly, who even reaches perfection, completion? None of us here are finished. Right. So even if you're 40% good at something, or if you show talent at something, it's only half the game. And what I'm trying to do is get people to focus on how building relationships is going to change your career.
Mm-hmm. It's definitely going to be beneficial, but in the end, it doesn't matter how hard you try, because this is something that the public's going to decide. If they don't like the music, you're fucked.
But that's practice, isn't it?
No, that's not practice.
It's preparation.
This is what you're presenting out to the world. If this is your style and what you like and this is what you want to play and nobody wants to hear it, sorry.
But that's practice proof pressure, right? Because it's how good are you at something?
It doesn't have to be. It could be great, but if the people don't like it, there's a lot of garbage
people.
But
the people
like,
don't know about it. Because I would even say that the skill of writing songs in a way that people want to digest.
Yes.
That's a skill, right? That's at least my job. So hopefully you're not going to kill me here. That's what I work with people on.
It's terribly important. I just mean, I've been in many a meeting where you're listening. All right, here's the final record. We're going to put this out. Let's all have a listen. And all these folks sit there and they bop their heads like, oh man, that's great. And it's like, this sucks balls. They just aren't admitting it to himself. They're about to put
meaning
a
what? So this
mean it's a bad record,
right? That's it. But that's the thing, is the practice is, it's not I've spent time doing something I think it's good.
Yeah,
my job is, hey, you got a song, let's have a listen, and you're bobbing your head, you're going, I love this, and I'm going, do you realize this isn't that interesting. This isn't grabbing people. That's my job, right? So I'm not saying it's easy, but I appreciate the challenge because it's, hey, can this song grab someone? Or if you're playing sport, right? Martial artists we have here, done a few things with Daniele, showed me some stuff, and he goes, good effort, but let's tweak it. Let's make it better. So to me, it's the overall equation of, even the focus has always been, how good are you at something? You know, post-industrialism, can you break your back and dig the ground? Can you be a skill? Whereas I grew up with both of my granddads, one coming from Jamaica, one coming from the north of England. They were surrounded by people that loved them in the village. Not because they took things, because they gave things. So how do you give something? Even sitting here with Daniele, we can go through that opportunity relationship creation side of that. And again, I have a skill, even through podcasting.
Sure. You know,
this idea of luck, right? We're talking about music or songwriting. We could be talking about martial arts.
Yeah, again, same.
Very different career. Exactly. Thank you. And I think it all stemmed from this conversation I had. I was invited to, it's called Create Studios in Swindon in the UK, to talk to 14 to 19 year old people who are interested in creative careers. Mm-hmm. And I came to them and went, what the fuck do I say to them?
Yeah.
How do I inspire them? And I realized, when I got there, what I prepared was very simple. It was about 6 slides, maybe 3 sentences, breaking down this idea. You know, Seneca said, whatever, preparation opportunity. We've heard this, it's not new. But how do you give it to someone? Because again, we had people who were ranging from professional athletes. He was 14, he was spending 20 hours a week playing ice hockey, right? All the way to girls who had to walk into the room with an assisted Zimmer frame. At 16, too nervous to be able to say her name. And I go, okay, what's going to apply to them? And luckily, this thing gave people, I don't know how to explain it. The best
kind of thing, like a framework to like a plan or something like, okay, what is that I can do? What are the steps to? Because I mean, yeah, that's one of the things that's absolutely daunting in anything that's not an obvious meritocracy. Where actually sports is slightly easier because sport, as a general rule, you know, you work hard. If you keep scoring, you will go somewhere. You know, eventually doors will open. Mm. With things clearly that are more creatively oriented, there's an element of value judgment, kind of like what we were saying, right? It's like somebody think this is amazing, yes. But if you don't find, it doesn't have to be the majority of people, but if you don't find a niche enough group of people who are into it, well, you can listen to it yourself and cool, you pat yourself on the back, but nobody else cares, right? And so I guess it's interesting to figure out, yeah, what are the steps somebody who say, hey, I'm into this stuff, I may even have some talent for this stuff, how do I go about it? How do I go from point A, me, I have some creative ideas that I think would be interesting, to be, how do I get it to be something that people want to consume, know that you exist, will consume, oh shit, you have a career, that kind of thing.
It's funny, want to consume, will consume, you exist. Want to consume on the preparation side, know that you exist on the opportunity relationship side, yeah. And then want to consume more. It's difficult. And even when I was talking to these kids, some were, luckily were honest enough to say, I don't know what I want to do. Because the whole premise is, what do you want to do?
Yeah,
that's half of the goal. And then you realize that you ask people even more simply, what do you spend time doing in your week?
Yeah.
A lot of these kids, you know, like I said, there's a girl who can barely say her name. And there are guys who are playing professional sport. Or one was playing, you know, pool, which is a bar sports for England. He was 16. Yeah, and you've got these kids. And then you've got them who barely say a word. You go, okay, well, what's going to be powerful? And the moment I realized something was worth exploring was when I said, hey guys, do you think you can control luck? What do you think happened? Did anyone put their hand up?
I wouldn't think so.
No. And you could say it's social pressure, you could say it's teenagers, but these were kids who were reasonably up for it. Some of them were quite rowdy at the front, so I think they would have said, yeah, I think so. Zero. Mm-hmm. In 4 classes, I did 4 lectures that day. And then I explained to them, probably a bit jankily, gave him this framework on, you know, orange slideshow, which would look crap in any kind of college. But suddenly you saw luck equals preparation opportunity, laid it all out. And then 3-4 slides later, 10 minutes later, I went, okay, so who thinks they can control luck? And I can remember this one kid, he was a stuntman and he skated. And he had like already started doing that, right? And I watched his eyes, like especially young men that maybe wouldn't say it, but I just watched his eyes spinning in his head. He's like, this is so fucking cool. I can actually do what I want to do.
Right.
You know? And there were others who felt that kind of change as well. And I think, okay, this is it. How do you even, like you said, I can't do anything for them.
Sure.
What can I hope to give them that they can do for themselves? That's why a framework is probably more impressive than me telling you what I've done, what I can do for you, or how if you follow this 1, 2, 3 step extra quick YouTube hack that you can ... you know, give me $99, I'll change your life. No, it's frameworks. And I'm glad that you knew the original kind of classical explanation of, you know, preparation, opportunity. And I'd heard that as a kid, but I went, yeah, but what about me? What can I do? And if anything, it was this other thing that happened that I was kind of doing my thing and going through it. And there were these girls who maybe 15 years old or something, and they were like giggling and laughing, like the classic, like disrupting in a class. And I was like, oh shit, how do I deal with this? I'm not actually a teacher. And I think how you change relationships, how you improve yourself in terms of opportunities and relationships, was what they were doing in the class. And I was trying to get across to them the idea of active listening. My mum's a therapist, so I grew up watching her doing active listening and the kind of Socratic method of questioning people to have them find it. Mm-hmm. Right. And there were these girls giggling, and I went, hey, what's going on? And they went, oh, well, she said something. And I said, well, can I just try something here real quick? We're talking about relationships. Why do you like her? She goes, or I said, do you like her? I went, yeah, I'm best friend. I said, well, why is that? She goes, you know, after some giggling and back and forth, they go, she listens to you, right? She goes, yeah. It was suddenly a serious moment. It's like, no, when I'm struggling, she's always giving me the space. And I went, and that's how you move through digital, professional, personal. How do you actually build relationships? How do you create things like that? And I remember that just being a really, it's a spark for me. And my mum's friend runs that company, and she's a fantastic human being. And I had a cry after that. You know, before I left, I sat down, I was sat in a chair and just cried. I was like, this is beyond what I can explain. And actually is. Your daughter, mm-hmm. It was a huge driver of, when we started talking, which is another example of what I'm trying to show framework-wise. And I think I got up at about 4 or 5 a.m., spoke to Iz for an hour or so, gave her all the basic things I could, got off the call, and I went, oh, that just felt amazing. Like I wasn't, you know, I'm not paid for that. But I said to myself, how do I get paid to do that for more people? And that was the first kind of attempt, was this Create Studios conversation. So I think that's what I want to bring to the world. And my example is currently in songwriting, and I'm slowly, jankily making my way through doing that, and it's all come from my framework. But the last thing I think, which is maybe more relevant, because I've spent my life consciously doing music ever since I was 12, you know, I was 5 years old singing in the play, and then 12 years old playing Red Hot Chili Peppers, and then 13 years old I'm taking some change, getting on a bus and playing my guitar in the local city I was born. But then I knew I was going to be speaking to these kids, and I didn't know, there were a couple of sportsmen, I didn't know that, but I thought, I can't turn up to them and say, oh, look at me, look what I've spent my whole life doing, this is what I do. I went, I've got to give them something more tangible. So I went, hey, by the way, guys, I'm currently in the process of also using this framework to play international sport. And they go, what? Because cricket's a sport. Do you know cricket?
Oh, yeah.
Have you seen any of it?
Of course.
What are your thoughts on it?
Wicked googly.
Can we... I'll give you that. We're fist bumping for the benefit of audio, but wicked googly, yeah. And I said to them, so often we think ourselves out of any opportunity we want to have for ourselves. And I don't have this time, I guess, for the whole story, but moving to a country 4 years ago, moved to France, couldn't speak the language, in lockdown, Brexit, COVID, didn't have any job. I couldn't work at a shoe shop, a bakery or anything. So what did I have? Two skills, people and songwriting. And I sat down, I literally went on YouTube and went, how to start an online business. Horrific, learning a language. I went through really crap, mental breakdown or breakthrough, 2024, right? So how are we going to say it? But you're going through all that. And then over this time, I didn't realize that I was getting residency in France. I was learning the language. And what happened is I went, okay. I had a friend of mine, I went to Australia. I have some friends who play cricket in Australia. Finally, my songwriting career started because of cricket. So kind of funny how it comes around. But he'd mentioned that his cousin, who's half French in Melbourne, Australia, was scouted by the international cricket team in France. And there was this funny feeling. I went, LJ, give me that number. Got the number for the scout. I had it in my phone for weeks. I was like, oh, they'll never want me. I'm not at the level, you know. Surely I won't qualify, all these kinds of things. And I was in London doing a podcast, walking up, and I went, fuck it, I'm texting him. So I texted the number. I saw it was a UK number, plus 44. The guy hits me back. I go, oh, okay. Like that. You know, when something happens too quick, you're not ready for it. And he goes, so what's going on? Do you want to have a meeting? I was like, I haven't said anything about my cricket, nothing. And I go, yeah, I'd love to meet. Where are you? He goes, I'm in London. He's like, well, I'm in London. He says, well, my girlfriend's arriving at 9:30 tomorrow morning. Do you want to have a meeting at 8:30 in Waterloo? He goes, sure. And I'm like, what the fuck is this? I'm just like, what, you know, what is going on? Next day, get there, sit down, have this coffee. And I promise you, as stupid as it sounds, I'm just saying the right things, telling the right stories, making laughs like this, like that. And he goes, yeah, I'll set you up a meeting. Here's the address in Paris. My uncle's the chairman. Here's an email. And it happens like this. And I'm going, oh my God, this is crazy. This is crazy. And I get through to the meeting. So I went to go see this artist I worked with in Paris. I was like, I'll go and see her. And I was like, oh wait, the cricket embassy that's in Paris. So I go, happened to have a meeting the next day. And the meeting's at 11 a.m. I was there at 7 a.m. I'd walked half of Paris just to get there. And I was like, I'm not missing this. Went and had the meeting. And as I walk in, there was the governing body on Zoom to this guy's uncle, the chairman. I go in, there's a secretary, there's a couple of coaches. I'm seeing like the officiation of the sport. And I'm like, what the fuck is happening? What the hell is happening?
Right, this is the real deal. Yeah,
it's crazy. Go and sit down, have a meeting. And then it's all in French as well. Because they're like, you're playing for the French national team in French. And you've got this army, ex-army, I found out, ex-French Foreign Legion guy. He's the coach. And sits me down in this boardroom, have the meeting. And essentially, you know, I hadn't played a crazy level of cricket in my life. If we go back to the equation, I'd played cricket since I was about 5 or 6 with my dad. It started, and then getting older and older, you play with adults, that kind of thing. You just don't realize it. Put a lot of hours in playing that sport. And I sit there and the guy goes, so who's French in your family? I go, no one. He goes, okay. I go, but I might be a resident soon. He goes, when? And he goes through this whole paperwork thing. Go through the meeting, and I'm like sweating in French and going, I don't use the wrong. Tell me all this thing. And slowly starts to warm to me. And I go, what do I need to do for training? He goes, okay. He says, if you're serious, because lots of people send them videos and say, isn't it a joke, European cricket? Da, da, da. He goes, if you're serious, if you like sport, you'll love me. Like, pretty intense guy, you know? Gives me these things I need to do for training. Da, da, da. And as I stand up, I'm not feeling very confident, but I stand up. And I truly believe it's every man's dream to be objectified. Right? So
you get used to it.
I stand up, and this guy, the guy's maybe 5'10". Used to play provincial cricket for India. Incredible athlete. I promise you, I stand up and he goes, wait, put your arm up. So I put my arm above my head like this. And he puts his arm up, and it's obviously lot lower than mine. He goes, oh yeah, I think we can work with this. And yeah, he goes, and he's literally objectifying me. And he goes, yeah, okay, look, yeah, okay, cool, right, let's go and do this. And then I walk out of the meeting.
Because you are what,
6'3"? I'm the little one, I was saying to Daniele. He saw me on Zoom with my brother.
Yeah, I saw him on Zoom with his brother. I thought Jimmy was a dwarf because he's like, his brother is like a head taller than him.
Wow.
And I'm like, and Jimmy's like, well, actually, I'm 6'3". I'm like, what the fuck is, how tall is your brother? You know, and he's almost 7 foot tall.
I hope he's playing some basketball somewhere.
That was my comment, right? He's a doctor.
Oh. But fielding, you're going to be quite, if you're quick, you cover half the field back there.
But again, like, I think people might understand it, I guess, in a way, baseball as well, right? But
yeah, it's a good match.
Yeah, it's hard. It's fucking hard. That's, in fact, I tried batting cages here, and I was like, oh, here's my luck frame, right? Preparation opportunity. Have a few swings in a batting cage. I'm like, never in baseball.
No.
Michael Jordan.
Right? 90 is incredibly fast.
Yeah, and I guess with this framework, it's not that you can do everything, is that you can try and do anything you want to do, because you can't do everything. We have so many hours, right? That's part of the equation. But when I walked out, again, you walk out of this thing, and you've got the France cricket stuff hanging there and trophies, and I go, yeah, thanks, nice to meet you. You meet the assistant coach, and he's like, oh, yeah, nice body. We can do that. That's what they're saying, right? And they haven't seen a single thing I've done for cricket. And the guy even essentially said, if you're fit enough, you're tall. I said, but what about bowling, which is one of the skills? It's like pitching. I said, he's like, nah, you're big, you're fit. If you could be fit. I was like, this is fucking hilarious. but the crazy thing is I left it and I kept my cool. And then as soon as I got out, I remember being by the Seine in the sun and I just started laughing and I went off and got some crap food and sat and went, this is so funny. I'm going to enjoy this. But the thing that struck me, and I knew you had this workshop coming up with these young people, which is part of what drove me to do it, is like, I need to come to them with something tangible. I can't just talk out my ass. I have to try and go, huge fan of the classics. You know, there's guys that are scholars, they're kind, but they can also kill yourself, like Daniel. Kill them, not kill yourself. But I walked past this lycée, which means college in Paris, and it was this massive canteen, huge canteen. And there were so many kids in there, and I promise you 70-80% of them were literally either on their phones directly like this, or they had AirPods in and they were eating like this. And I went, that's the issue, but that's the opportunity. I'm here laughing like a twat, walking up and down Paris because I've had this chance and opportunity, when most people are looking down at their phones, or they're craning and hurting their necks looking up at what other people have that they don't. We all do this, right? If you can just pull yourself away, the opportunity cost of what you can do with your time was really apparent. And again, not to say that I'm going to represent France cricket. I think my paper's clear, so next year I can try. But it's just this whole idea of, can you, I mean, Daniele's been amazing trying to help me with my lack of self-esteem, crap self-image, all these kinds of things. But we think ourselves out of so much before we even try. And that's me, it's not we, it's kind of something I struggle with, is when you hear people giving advice, maybe it's more honest for me to say, I struggle with all of this. I created this because I would love to have had it. It's not being cool and generous and going, oh yeah, I'm so great, I want to give it away. It's like, no, I really struggle with this. I know how painful this is. Can I leave the world a little bit better than I left it, than when I came? So that's where I'm at with it. And if I get to do the cricket, it'd be hilarious.
So you, with your, like with this framework that you, all this stuff that you're working on, if you want to break it, maybe for the people listening, in case, just to make, to clarify.
Yeah, thanks.
Beside the fact that you do have a podcast, can you give the good folks the title of the podcast?
Yeah, the podcast is I Wish I Knew That About Songwriting. And it's the very reason that I'm sat here.
Right. So that's specific on songwriting, but of course some of the principles can be applied to other things as well. Mm. And the kind of work that you do, I guess for lack of a better term, and probably no, that is the actual term, is kind of coaching. Mm. Is break it down a little bit, like the clients that you work with kind of around the world via Zoom and this, that. What I think is probably clear already to some people, but what exactly do you do with these people? What's the process that you take them to? Why, in which way you feel you help them? In which way you feel that, like, break it down a little bit for people.
For sure. My earliest memory, I think, was I was two, much like a table like this. My mum was sat with Daniela's. She's a therapist. And there was a young woman sitting here, and I was 2 years old, crawling underneath. That's my earliest memory. And that was a therapy session. So I really early on learned the power of creating space for people, having them see their own thing and help them move it. So what I do for songwriting is, you know, for insurance purposes, it's not advertised as therapy. But in a lot of senses, I will find someone down there who goes, hey, they could be of any age. You know, I've got these songs. I want to be a musician. And part of me does go, really, you want to try? It's a hell of a... I mean, my dreams are trashed of wanting to play in like a rock band that ended last year, pretty much, a year ago. It was awful. Very deep depression after that. It's the complete reconfiguration of everything that you wanted to do, right? But have these people, and obviously I don't say this to them. I focus on how I can help them, but they'll bring me their songs. And
what happens if they're terrible?
They work with me for longer, hopefully. And that is the point, though, because I have to do kind of expectation checking with some people, because
not everybody has it.
No. And if anything, I started the podcast without going into too many tangents, because talking about the podcast as a tool to create opportunity for yourself is very relevant, I think. But I started it to kind of try and give a showcase to songwriters and go, hey, if you want to know, this is how you write songs. So in the sessions, very often people don't get further than lyric generation and creation. And that some of my clients have been with me for 2.5 years every week. They still dip back into this thing. The best way I could think of it is like working out. You know, you warm up, you do the exercise, depending on what you want to do. You do particular things like we've done this week, which is funny. Then you warm down, you do it again because you've got an album to do, which is the same as a performance or a scouting trip or a show or anything. And it's helping people to write better songs. Because when I was, I went to music university. I wanted to go really early. I was like 16 years old. I was like, I want to leave the house. Mum's like, just go when you're 18. So I go when I'm 18. And I realize it's created to make you feel like this is part of the industry, but it's really not. And there's nothing you can do here that's going to really translate unless you're kind of lucky. So I took
Major in guitar or voice?
Singer. As a singer. And the classic dissertation or final essay that you do is the cop out. The easy one is, these are my influences, this is how I write music. And that was just like, you know, 80% of the people in my degree stopped doing music the day we finished, the day, because they went, oh, they get through it. For me, as a masochist, I guess, was like, I'm gonna write an essay on how you write effective songs. And that was start, and I got a terrible mark, but I'm just, okay, how do you write effective songs? And from that, you know, 10, 12 years ago, and studying songwriters, actually one called Alex Garingas, I remember studying him, seeing him, Grammys with Kelly Clarkson. A week and a half ago, I was at his studio. We're hanging out, we're writing with him. And it's strange. It's really strange because, yes, we work on technique, but those people that just work on technique, cool. But I feel like that's tapping into half of the potential of working with me, because half of the equations we talked about is how good are you at something. And as you said perfectly, if the songs are crap, you're gonna have to do a lot of work. And truly, I'd love to say that anyone can do it, but not everyone can be the best thing they want, but everyone can try. And I think that's the point, right? We all want to, you know, in any area of my life, there's people I look up to who are embarrassingly better than me. But to some people, I might be the thing that they look up to. So you have to kind of realize that, okay, it's kind of all relative, but giving someone a framework, much with this luck, same what I do with songwriting, is give people a framework, even with it is, like we were writing songs this morning, and it's amazing to work with someone who's learning songwriting, because I have to kind of be there and guide her and go, okay, this might help you in this thing that you're trying to do right now, and here's a structure, 1 to 10. Of how this can work. But then she might go left or right or do something different. I go, oh, fantastic. Have to want to learn as well. Have to want to be humble. So that's difficult. It's very easy to be an authority, I think. But essentially, it's magicians do a trick that goes from 1 to 10. We have no idea what the steps in between were. Same as sportsmen, same as musicians, martial artists. Whereas a songwriting, I'll go, hey, what I did was 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. And you give them all those tools and you wrap a bow on it and name it. It's not my way. It's how you write songs. It's how songs are formed, how we consume them. It's very much connected to psychology. So when it is about melodies, we're not robots. Melodies are how we speak. And how do you expand that and make it more dramatic? So working people on how to write songs better. I really enjoyed recently, like, how do you put together a plan as an artist? But also I believe that my expertise is not marketing. I can talk to you about it. My expertise is people and songwriting. So that's what has kind of informed my framework. And I guess what pushed the framework to come up was a want to play sport, because I always thought my body is aging. I know it's silly to say, but I felt it at 28, 27. It changes. It creeps up on you.
Okay, just wait.
Something. Huh?
Just wait.
I believe you. I'm not going to be that guy. I believe you. Yeah, so I think hearing people that have dreams that I had, I could be bitter, I could be jealous, or I could help them. And I think the reason my band didn't work is we were good, but we were too focused on being bitter instead of getting better. And I would love to say that was a fun, jovial lesson to learn, but it's soul crushing. Really, really difficult. And yeah, I think if I can't necessarily do it myself in the way I'd like to do it, then at least if I can help other people get 5, 10, 6 steps ahead of where I started, that would be cool. So,
well, and that's the reality of good coaching. Like, you know, you look in just about anything. You look at somebody like Cass D'Amato in boxing. Cass D'Amato is not the best boxer there was. Cass D'Amato wasn't even really a boxer in a way. Cass D'Amato, however, was the best coach around for boxing and created Mike Tyson and created Floyd Patterson and created, because it's different skills, you know. In many ways, sometimes the guy who does, for whom every door opens easy every time, is not going to be a good coach. Because they're like, oh, you just do A, B, and C. And it's like, no, you did A, B, and C, and they work like this. 99% of other human beings don't go through that. And so then they don't know what to tell you, because that's not their experience. Whereas in many ways are the people who often have struggled with some things, but they are smart, that can understand all the 20,000 pitfalls in a process and can guide you through pitfalls and can see, okay, but this is what could happen and this is... Because ultimately, that's seriously, like, especially you see it with a lot, with athletes is easier to measure because you see it in objective terms. But some of the best athletes are usually not the best coaches, and vice versa. Mm. And some of the best coaches were usually not the best ones onto the field, because they are pretty much two separate skills. You know, being able to break something down for somebody who may not be... who may have some talent, but they, you know, you may not have the same talent, but you have an understanding of the process that somebody else doesn't have, or maybe you just, you aren't as lucky, or maybe you aren't, whatever it is, but like something that allow you to go through that process. It's a skill. And a lot of it, like, that's kind of what you started with. A lot of it has to do with communication, which is something that, you know, again, you can be fantastic in a field, does not mean you know how to communicate it to another human being. So I think that's where is interesting, because we often think that teaching / coaching and being a master of that particular craft are one and the same. And the performer and the coach are usually two different roles. Like, hardly ever you get somebody who's at A plus in both. You know, typically you're going to be good at it. You know, if you're going to, you know, if you're going to teach something, you're going to be at least, he's a good performer, but fantastic coach, or vice versa. It's like, yeah, he can explain it a little. He's okay, but damn, have you seen him as a performer? He's amazing. And I think that's part of what's useful to remember, because so often I think we fall into the trap of thinking, I want to learn basketball from Michael Jordan. Unless you are Jimi Hendrix, I shouldn't learn guitar from you. Unless you're like, and you're like, no, those are probably not the guys you want. Never mind that you'll never be able to afford it. But beside that point, is those are not the guys who are going to teach you. Whereas somebody else whose name you have never heard may be the one who teach you to play like damn Jimi Hendrix if you have the right talent for it. You know, if you have the raw talent, they can take you there. And so I think it's an interesting, I think it's also really smart for you to develop it as, and you use that metaphor kind of like the same thing as, like, in a way, a personal trainer does for somebody diet and workout habits. It can be done the same way in creative fashion, in creative fields.
Yeah.
In your field specifically, it applies to songwriting, but of course it can be in a million other different things. You work primarily via Zoom because you're like working with people all over the place, right? Like, not just where, like, actually, no. Do you work with anybody in person?
I have done it in person. And funnily, when I landed here in LA, I was 2 blocks away from 2 of my clients.
Oh, nice.
Really cool. Because the American market seems to be one. But yeah, I'm very lucky. I think, oh, there you go. And I'm like, I'm going to stop that. I'm not lucky. Prepared. And I created an opportunity for myself. And I got there. That'd be dumb. But all of the sweat and, again, emotional, mental, physical breakdowns to create a business. And
sure.
I don't think you can have anything of value without that kind of pain exchange.
Sure.
But then, absolutely, I can work with someone on kind of New York time in the morning. So I live in France, so that's kind of afternoon. Or even someone in Australia or the UK, that's my morning. In the early afternoon, NYC or Central Time. And then you've got LA time kind of coming up towards the end of your day. And I'd love to say it was smooth. I'd love to say it's always consistent.
Nothing is.
It's how I've learned it.
No, exactly.
And you put yourself on this train of...
Yeah.
Now people ask me, hey, how'd you do the podcast? I was like, I didn't realize I was thinking about that skill. And then people ask me, I'm aware of the audience I'm with here, so I'm not an expert on it, but it's just, oh, I could tell you the basics. And even what you're saying is sometimes there is this journey of needing a new mentor, a different coach, a better teacher, because you have outgrown them and then it's not efficient anymore. And I went to this business convention and the best thing was the efficient frontier, the idea of, which was kind of informing that, again, even if you are perfect, you're Cristiano Ronaldo, you're Michael Jordan, you're only 49% to the 50 of how good you are.
Yeah.
The other half is the efficient time, where if you put 100 hours in, you might grow 49.2, but you put 100 hours into something where you haven't spent any hours, you're going to get full efficiency for that time. And I guess I'm still on the way to understanding how I would tell people have better relationships. Because even I would be stupid to think that everyone was raised by a therapist and two kind people that were kind of sent to the village. But I go, okay, well, there's active listening. There's even energy we've talked about. About that. And I think it's very tangible. Socratic method. A couple of different, a book called The Go-Giver. It's fantastic. And it's a book, kind of my style of book, where you read it and it gives you this gem of a story wrapped in a kind of parable. But the beauty is it says, this works, but it takes 5 years. Those books, they're not what people necessarily want. But I remember I read that 3.5 years ago, and coming up on 4 years, it's like, this works. And again, books like that. But I want to be clear as well, it's some people I work with, again, 2.5 years, 3 years, and they're still trying to grow, trying to do things. But the beautiful thing is when I see, we work on the songwriting, right? But ostensibly, they're working on themselves. And one client, you know, I actually interviewed her about it, but not to tell the specifics. She really struggled in her relationship. She really struggled in her life and things weren't going well. And then after some time working together now and again, heard she's getting married. She's won an independent music award. And I'm like, what the hell? Then she started coaching people locally. And we're going to talk about, again, how I can help her do that, because I know the basics of that. And you just go, this is amazing. And even working with people who, people just listen to the show, actually, they can be more successful songwriters than some of the people I'm aspiring to or working with who have this dreams, who have this. Because trying to redefine what's successful is like, hey, if you can enrich your life by doing this thing, like personal training, right?
Yep.
Such a big thing, martial arts, anything, podcasting. This enriches lives. That's why I'm sat here. So it's in a very clear way, that's why I'm sat here with you guys. So...
Yeah, songwriting is just such a tough one, because you can make great songs and they just never catch to the rest of the world. I think the most important thing you have to have is that you make songs that you like.
Yeah, I mean, that's step one,
you're,
right?
That, otherwise, you're going to have to accept that from the very beginning. You may never sell a single song, but if there's songs that you enjoy and you can play for folks and be proud of, that's the victory.
You're successful.
It cannot possibly be, I want to sell 10 million records, because that's just not realistic.
Yeah, and I mean, that... Speaking of the things that are out of your control, yeah, you can increase the odds of, but you know, you go from 0.01%. If you are a magician, you pull it off where you have a 20% of success in that department, and you're a god at having done that.
Mm. Yeah.
But you're still at 20, you know, at the end of the day, you're still rolling the dice to some degree. Whereas the you being proud of your work, hopefully that's not the case. Hopefully that's the easier path of like being able to be to a place where you can express yourself creatively and
be like
happy.
You just said, the benefits are far beyond I have a number one song in the world, most likely not going to happen. But from getting a hold of that creativity and being able to make it into things that you're cool with, that make you happy, you know, you're improving your life all over the place.
And I love that you said that, because it's something I've come across recently of people when they're writing, before they finish an idea, they go, what are other people going to think of this? They go, one second, what do you think of it?
Exactly.
If you love it, and if people are tone deaf and they have no talent for music, fine. The thing that they love, it's not what people want to hear, right? But most people have a really good feeling for that. And I go, hey, if you imagine these two things that kind of intersect, what you love cannot be that far away from what others I think will connect to if we go authenticity. And there are actually a lot of really specific, difficult, boring, nerdy things that you could do to write songs and make them better, right?
Sure.
By analysis. But truly, what is can come out with naturally, you know, is fantastic. So,
and some of the best ones in the world came out in 3 minutes.
100%.
They just spill out. The muse blesses you and it just pours out. Yep. And there it is.
Yep.
Yeah.
And preparation for that moment is also important. So when she's there, there's a pen available. There's a piano around, whatever it takes.
You
can get
that,
it out.
That stuff. Can you get your GarageBand? I was showing you how to use GarageBand as an assistant, not a distraction.
And oh, yeah.
Even what you said with the whole, wrote this in 3 minutes or 30 minutes ago. That's really nice. But that, to me, feeds into very fucking toxic thing of a kid going, but I can't write in 3 minutes. I'm like, what are you talking about? The best, no, it's...
Yeah, we're not asking you to. We're just saying once you get to a point, the possibilities are there.
And even the guy, because you know that, right? You're creative, you understand these things. But when someone's looking as I did, I speak for myself, I go, oh, but I'm not there. And you go, by the way, that guy didn't write anything good for 8 months. He was turning up and writing every day, which I respect.
Yep.
So I say to people, those difficult songs that don't get released, that you spend all that time on, you would not have a career if that's all your songs. Those ones where you graft, you lift in the dark, you're doing your Arnold Schwarzenegger 1 hour in the gym, no one can see you, you're screaming at yourself, but then you come and perform, same in sport, right?
Well, and even it's kind of like what you said, right? That even the 3 minute thing is like the overnight success
after 20 years of 20 practice.
20 years in the making. Yeah. You know? Oh, yeah.
There's nothing more true in the world.
That day clicks, but it doesn't click just because. It clicks because you work like a dog for so long, and that particular day, every single line right, and it click. But, you know, another thing that you brought up that I think is connected to a topic that I find fascinating is the idea, you know, when you're talking about what it does, both in terms of personal satisfaction, but also when it comes to personal evolution through a path, you know, whereas you guys are saying, like, you know, you have somebody who's working, ostensibly they're working on songwriting, but through part of that process, instead, other aspects of their lives are better. And that to me is a key concept in, if you think about Zen, like the Zen attitude about art, you know, when you do a Zen in archery, Zen in flower arrangement, Zen in gardening, Zen in this, the whole idea behind it is that, yes, you may become a great gardener, you may become a great archer, you may become a great this, but the goal there is not so much, I'm trying to become the best archer in the world and win the Olympics, is maybe you become an amazing archer, but that's a side benefit that shows up almost as what you are doing is you're working on yourself. You're not really working on your archery per se.
Yep.
The problem is that working on yourself is such an iffy concept that you need a concrete embodied path to work on yourself. And so it may be by being a singer, it may be by being a writer, it may be by being a martial artist, maybe by whatever the hell, right? Like the whole Zen idea is that there are 10 zillion art forms and they are all paths that can take you to a place. But really Zen views those paths as something for personal discovery, for taking you to, ultimately, all the arts are just different ways to take you to the same point, which is transcend the art itself or the specific, the technical specifics of it, right? So, again, do you become a great archer? Fantastic. That's totally not the point. So it's great if it adds, but again, the point is something else, is that you're becoming a better human being in a way. And I find that very important as a reminder, because so often when we talk about success, of course we all care about objective, measurable success of, I want the number one record, I want to be Michael Jordan, I want that of success. And I get it. And I'm not saying you shouldn't care about that, but there is that other side to it that is just as important, if not more, that is the, how are you changing by working through this one specific discipline, you know? Because at the end of the day, the discipline is secondary. It's like, is it really that important about putting a basketball through a hoop? It is if you want to make have the Nike contract like Michael Jordan, but in terms of you as a human being, it's not really that important. What's important is that everything you learned by working like a dog, the discipline, the working with a team, doing all these 10,000 other things that transform who you are in the process. And so I think is, I do it too. I get so caught up on objective results that I forget that there are other things that are not any less important in that path. And in some way, they may be, according to Zen at least, they may be 100 times more important than the outcome.
I was going to say that you're very humble to say that, but I've been in your house now. It's the second weekend here. It's fucking paradise here because of what you've created, what you've chosen as a priority, right? As to your daughter, your partner,
sure,
your dog, your energy. But no, I understand you. We can get lost.
Well, but also,
that, right?
I mean, and this is, I guess, where the luck factor, it's a complicated discussion when talking luck, right?
Always,
because
yeah.
On one end is, sure, if you don't work like a dog, if you don't put the 20 years of preparation, the 3-minute inspiration is never going to happen. The meeting in which your life changes is never going to happen. You know, that kind of shit is not going to happen unless you have... you work like a dog, you get good at what you do, whatever your particular skill is, you know. So all this stuff is, you need all those qualities in order to, and not just qualities, but effort in order to be able to generate results. Having said that, there is an element that's outside of your control.
Yeah.
Where if that meeting did not happen, if that coincidence didn't happen, if that door doesn't open really by luck in that moment, then all your preparation, all your hard work, all your something would not translate to any measurable outcome out there.
Yeah,
you know?
And if anything, I've had that. And something stuck in my mind that you said earlier is when you said rolling dice.
Yeah.
Something about that went, that's my point. If the goal in life is to roll a 12 with two dice, six-sided dice, pretty tough.
Yeah.
It's going to take a while.
Yeah.
But if you can work on something specifically, people, skills, preparation, opportunity, you might be able to scratch some extra dots into each side so that really you're rolling with all it has is fives and sixes on both dice. But you're absolutely right. I wouldn't be sitting here if I'd have if I'd had everything go right. I wouldn't be thinking about those kind of things. And even as we said, there are things you can't control. And I guess for me, to my detriment, a lot of the time I'm always like, but can I?
Right. Of course.
And but I love that you add that boundary because we have to be realistic. Also, I'd love a number one record.
Oh,
I mean, I'd love to be rich. I'm not going to sit here and go, do you know what? I failed. So what I'm going to do is make other people happy with their... No, you can't accept that. I don't want to accept that in my life, but it's such a fucking struggle to go.
Well, and there's so many people that I've met through the years. I mean, I know people that musician-wise are phenomenal.
Yep.
They can do anything. But they can't write a goddamn song.
Right.
And won't accept it.
What the hell's that?
It's pride, I suppose. I mean, if they would do some other people's songs, that would be the last piece, but they refuse to accept it because they feel like if I'm not the musician songwriter,
I mean, hell, yesterday,
somehow copping out.
Yeah.
The country music scene will tell you that that's not a problem at all. You got a great song. Bring it over.
100%. Like yesterday, no naming names, not to insult anybody, but we're listening to a singer together and we listen to her do covers and we are like, holy shit, ridiculous. This woman has the most beautiful voice. She's amazing.
Yep.
We listen to a song that she wrote or maybe somebody wrote for her, but basically it's like, and we're like, damn, this sucks so bad. Mm-hmm. It's terrible.
Soulless.
You know, it's like soulless, no... And doesn't even value what she's got, which is this amazing voice, doesn't come out. It's like her voice is almost despite the song you hear it. And you realize those are different talents, you know. And again, that, for example, right, speaking of the factor of luck or relationships or something, if she became good friends with somebody who happened to be a talented, sensitive songwriter,
they'd be on their way.
She could be the goddess of music tomorrow in terms of her singing talent. But without it, she's somebody who has success, like people click her thing on YouTube and stuff, but is nowhere near what she could be if she zagged rather than zinging in that one thing of running into the right person, somebody who give her the right song at the right time and all of that, for sure.
Everything has to be in place.
Yeah. And that's why, in fact, it's funny, like when we talk about luck, right? Like when I look at my life, I feel both things equally strongly at the same time. Like there's a part of me that I look at like, man, I got so damn lucky 12 times. Like I feel like I roll a 12 times in a row. But then I look at where I'm at and I'm like, on one end, I'm like, holy shit, look where I started. These so many things have gone right. Then I look at where it could have been, rolling a couple of other 12s there, and it could be like 50 miles ahead of where I'm at. In, yeah. And it, not in an unrealistic way, not in like a crazy, oh, something major should have happened. It's like one lucky break would have put me in a completely different place. Mm. Vice versa, one lucky break less, I would be at a very different place on another milestone. So it's weird. It's like when I look at my life, I feel both insanely lucky and insanely not lucky at the same time, right?
But you're happy in your place in your moment.
Exactly.
Which that's is the most like, important
yeah,
thing.
No, exactly.
People
exactly.
have to, yeah. I mean, all these people that are just, oh, my life, this, that, and the other. No. When have you ever starved?
Yeah.
When have you, you know, yeah. mm-hmm. there are tough times. Money's tough. Bills suck. But like true misery?
Well, and that's, and I think that's important. That's another thing we were talking about today before we were recording is like how hard you bust your ass even doing things that are absolutely awful, not because you are, not because necessarily this is going to make you rich and wealthy. They're not, but they keep food on the table. They keep your family well fed. They keep something going. Mm. And for a bunch of people, they'll feel like, oh, this is beneath me. I shouldn't be having to do it. And I can say, yeah, you're fucking smart and you shouldn't be having to do this bullshit job. But guess what? This is where we're at. And that's what needs to be done.
And there are probably mistakes in the past that got you there.
That's a possibility. Or maybe a fucking medical emergency, yes. whatever, right? So exactly. anything can happen. The point is, this is where you are.
Yeah.
What are you willing to do? Red, whether it's right or not, whether it's you deserve better or not, does it? What are you willing to do with the cards you have in your hands right now?
Yeah,
and that's key there too. There you go. What are you willing to do with the cards that you have in your hand right now? And I think that's, we were going to come to it, but I think the difficult part of this, because we have a positive framework, is great. What do I want to do? What can I achieve? But then, as you guys have kind of hinted at, when it goes wrong, going, okay, this is a raw wound, but let me just unpick some of those stitches and go, what did I forget here? And you don't deserve a lot of things to happen to us. We talked about being mm-hmm. born in a place where you deserve to have a victim mentality, but then at the same time, don't stay there.
Yeah.
And even we were talking about it, it's not always that obvious, but for me in England, I have a posh boy, rich boy, privileged life. And if anything, that was more heartbreaking for me, particularly my mum. She was like, you've put everything you've got. She would like let me almost miss exams to take me to play a show, things like that. Gave me all the support that we need. And they're like, we don't know anyone. You know, you're good at it. You're getting better. But it's, we have a nice life. I mean, really, it was a terrible life. We'll talk about that another day. But emotionally and financially. But in terms of a position, you know, I'm in a good one. So I'm very aware. We talked about that when I say this, it's not you should have what I have or I have what you have. It's what cards do you have? If you are 2% in talent out of the 50 and you have no relationships, at least you know where to start putting that energy. And we talked earlier about if you've got time to criticize someone else, you've got time to do something.
Oh. Right? I hate that worse than anything. People that bitch and whine. That movie sucked. That song's terrible. That's Have you ever written one?
Yeah, right.
Have you ever made one?
Yeah.
Do you realize the miracle required to even get a movie finished and then for it to be even decent?
The miracle's a good word. I don't really use that one much, but it's pretty fucking close for films.
It really is. It should never happen. They should fall apart at every time. I just interviewed this guy, Michael Grillo. He was... his first job was working on The $6 Million Man. As a director assistant, and he just loved it because Lee Majors had Farrah Fawcett around on the set, but because he was in the director training program, they would move you to different studios. Mm-hmm. So he said, "Oh, tomorrow's your last day." Lee Majors showed up with Farrah Fawcett, and she had autographs from all the Charlie's Angels, and now he has to leave to go to another studio. He shows up in the studio, and his job that day is to feed a guy who's getting makeup put on overnight for the morning shoot.
Right.
So he always has to spoon feed somebody.
Yep.
Well, he ended up being on the set of Young Frankenstein and just blew up from there.
It's amazing.
But at the time, he's like, I can't believe I'm stuck to this stupid fucking shit. I'm sorry. It's just amazing. Did not even, and I think in the end, his final big movie was Avenger Endgame. And in between,
there isn't
Body Heat, Deer Hunter.
Yeah. Just, so super
incredible.
Luck. I mean, again, in that sense, lucky.
Stumbled into it. But
and clearly used the opportunity well. But
exactly, because his real skill was being able to negotiate things when shit was going down. Yeah. And I'm locking myself in my trailer. Well, there's 1,000 people on set right now. Yeah. You need to come out of the fucking trailer. He was a master at those sort of things.
Right.
And because of that, ended up in the exact place he was supposed
people
to be.
People skills, right?
Yep.
Incredible people skills.
Yep.
Yeah.
And story after story, just unbelievable. Like,
those are the people you want to be around, right? If you talk about energy, who do you want to be around?
And feed off of it. And one of my favorite things that he said about, you know, when you have a movie set running, you have 110 people there that each one of them has an integral part. And it may not be glorious, but I'm the guy that puts the track down on the dolly so the shot goes well. I'm the guy to make sure the lights, you know, the bulbs are in so that when they're...
Yeah, the bulbs.
They may not seem important, but one guy fucks up, one person fucks up, and the whole thing gets backed up 4 hours.
Christian Bale goes viral, yeah.
Yeah. It's amazing. That was just an amazing... I just listened to that a couple weeks ago, and it's like... He said his nickname was the Smiling Viper, or the Smiling Cobra.
But why?
Because he would deal with these like real intense situations, and we'd come at you and literally tell you, this isn't going to happen.
Right.
And be able to deliver it in a way that you realized, well, I guess this isn't going
to
happen.
Yeah. And I think, that goes back to the playing the card. Like, this is the situation. How do you want to play it?
Yeah.
You know, because so often
we shut this day down
with
1,000 people here. This costs millions of dollars. Mm. And it can't be, you know, and actors that can only be here today. So if we don't do it today... You're derailing everything by your antics.
And I think that's what's important, because so often, and we all do it, and I'm the first who's guilty of this shit, but like so often we think about how we should be, how we could be, how I deserve it to be, how, Jesus, look at all the stuff I've done for it to be something other than what it is.
Yep.
And the point is, you may be right in everything you said up until that point, you're still wasting energy. You know, because it's like, you're right, this sucks. Yeah, no, you do not deserve it. Yes, based on everything you have done, the outcome should have been different. This is where we are. What are we going to do about it?
Yeah.
You know, and I think it's key. In some way, I like it a lot. I mean, you can apply it in all fields, right? But to me, it's one of the things that show up in sports a lot. Because, like, in the middle of the game, if you are worrying about how the referee blew a call that screwed you over, that set you behind,
you're out of your mindset.
You're worrying about the fact that your friend tripped his ankle and now you are one guy less, that kind of thing is like, by that point, rather than being down by 5, you're down by 20. Because it's like, doesn't matter. Yeah, that's shit. You can commiserate about it later. Right now, worry about being down by 5 and what can you do to be down by 3. And then and slowly down, up it
until. Because we always tell stories of success in hindsight. And I think, how do we give people tools for the moment so that they can have something to think about that went well? Because it's so easy to inhabit films and stories.
Oh, yeah.
Right? But
because you get we always get the survivor bias, like the guy who's like, I was in the trenches and then it all worked out. And it does happen, but of course, it's not everybody.
Yeah, 800 guys still laying in the trench.
Exactly. And my favorites are the ones who are like, God intervene and save me. And it's like, whereas God thought that the other 1,000 assholes deserve to die.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Nice thinking, Magellan.
Yeah, those are always the funny one. But like, I think it's, in that sense, speaking of Zen, which keeps coming up for some reason, it's like, it's the same thing as when you are like, why would the samurai be into Zen? Because these guys are no-nonsense, practical guy who just need to be more effective at killing the other guy with a sword before they kill you. You know, they are not guys who are sitting around trying to find enlightenment and I want to be one with the Buddha. It's like, that's not the point.
That's gritty.
So why would they? And so much of it is because Zen Buddhism was about being in the moment. You know, not being caught into what should be, what would be your emotional reaction to something, but purely being in the moment where you react in a practical way. And of course, turns out that when somebody's swinging a sword at you, being in the moment and
pretty
reacting
important.
Very practically with no distraction is what increases dramatically your odds of success.
There, though. That's it. Increasing dramatically. You might still die.
Yes.
You may well still fail, but how do you get as close to rolling that 12 as possible?
Yeah. Which is what it is. And that's the only honest thing one can say, because, you know, when you get all the... And that's the difference between like a good coach and a smoke seller who is just selling you a dream that's bullshit, is the ones who are like, just do the 12 steps to inner power and with my program you will be... No, there is no guarantee, but tell you what, I can bring you to a place where your odds have maximized dramatically.
Or you're even aware of the framework in which you're operating.
Yeah.
I love the Robert Greene Laws of Power. I took that the end of last year and it went, this game is already happening. Do you want to learn the rules?
Yeah.
Of course, that could be a trick to write great books, but I went, well, I'm already currently bleeding and I've lost,
I might as well. This leg,
yeah. And I don't know how, so yeah, that sounds good, but...
He was a guest.
Yeah. He was an early guest.
Brian Holiday as well, we talked about. Huge fans of both of them. Yeah,
we had Brian awesome. Holiday, we had Robert
Greene. I'm a huge fan of this fucking guy. Sat across from
me.
Yeah. New love for you, Rich, but... Yeah. It's just, even being here is surreal, right? I think that if we talk about that as a function of creating opportunities, it's just to learn from you in ways that you don't know, you've taught me and I don't quite understand yet, is that being around people that have done something significant and interesting. And I see emails that people have loved the show, and even Pablo, you've introduced me to, he's going to be seeing me in Mexico. It's like, you get around good people. You put yourself around good people by being prepared, right? If I was stupid or I was rude to you during the interview,
sure.
I might be stupid on something, it wouldn't be sitting here. I don't get to get a slice of you. As funny as it sounds, I go, oh, what was he saying? And my brain will start clicking through it, you know, and just giving yourself that chance is to be here. And it's not easy either. Even talking about, people say, oh, you were here in Australia, you're doing this, you're here, and I am like, oh yeah, do you think it was free? You think it was free? And it's even, that's something I want to kind of develop and put into this idea and put it as a book, I guess, start with some videos to see if this works. Even here is me testing this idea out, and it goes like, by the way, this is going to suck more than the alternative of staying where you are, but
short term.
And I think, you know, there's that line, it's stuck in my mind because I watched it recently again, my Lord of the Rings marathon. But you know when there's the father of elf princess Arwen?
Yeah.
And he's like, look, if everything you want works out and you marry Aragorn, you have a kid with him, he becomes king, Mordor is defeated, oh, everything you could possibly dream works out the way... He's still gonna die. He's still all gonna... He's essentially like, in the great scheme of things, he's more or less making the point that when you take a long view in the great scheme of things, hardly anything matters on a deeper, bigger level, you know? So, but the point is, one can take it as depressing, or one can take it as also inspiring, because all the psychodrama that we get through about this, that, I need to achieve this, no, but this was not quite what... It doesn't fucking matter. It's a game, okay? We're playing a game. Try to play the game the best possible way. Try to play the game in a way that maximizes your joy, that maximizes the joy of the people around you. Mm. Try to play a game. But at the end of the day, you're still playing a game, you know? And
we all end up in the same place.
Right. And so it's like, and for me, for some people, this may be a depressing outlook. For me, sometimes when we, like people... who have my mindset, which is ultra perfectionist, ultra everything depends on me and my effort and I have to do, and it's very serious, and unless I do things right, all is gonna... Yeah. It's like, hey man, relax, take it easy here, okay? It's like, yeah, I appreciate the focus, I appreciate how hardcore and determined you are, but also take a deep breath, you know? And of course, people need to hear different things. There's the guy who needs a fire under his ass and is like, okay, I'm glad you take it lightly and you understand it's a game, but get a little more serious about it. And then there are assholes like me who are like, ah, I need to go hard and push and work and then need to go, yeah, man.
Yeah, but you've done that for me. You've gone, what are you doing?
Yeah,
but sometimes you say that, like, just...
I'm great at telling other people. That's what I mean. I can, but, you know, it's like... And it's like anything. It's a dance, right? It's a balancing act. It's, I've gone a little too far this way. Let me tweak it a little. For some people, your balance is always going to tilt more to one side than the other. And so your effort is going to be more or less consistently going one way. But sometimes you go too far the other way and you have to balance it back. Mm. And I think even that's... to me, good coaching. You know, when somebody on the outside can look at you and go like, saves you time, because basically rather than making you go way off balance where you pay the price, they can catch you early and go like, it's beginning to go a little out here. Yeah. Let's really back 2 degrees, you know? And that saves you time and energy, which is great.
It's also that I have 8, 9, 10 clients or all these different ones at different times. Every single one needs a different thing.
Of course.
Oh, yeah.
And they log on and they don't realize the one I had just before is me sitting there essentially being present like an owl.
Mm-hmm.
And the next one is like voraciously typing everything, saying like, here's a plan. Okay, cool. What do you think about this? Where are you going to be? What are you? And learning to adapt to people, I think is you have to be humble. Otherwise, I mean, I'm not, if I've said that, right? That's the whole catch. But turning up and doing a job is...
Well, but that's what you said at the very beginning when you were talking about your mom and the ability to listen, because that's key in everything, right? I mean, think about like if you are dating, what's one of the most attractive things that a lot of people crave? They actually care about them. They are actually listening to what they have to say, that they are actually... And something as basic as being able to listen and actually care about what you are hearing and not, that already, something that basic puts you 10 steps ahead of the game.
Oh yeah, so it's a rarity.
It's a rarity, exactly. And you're thinking, wait, all I got to do is actually listen and mean it and actually take what you're saying into account and respond. You think it wouldn't be the end of the world, except that it's so rare that, as you're saying, that it is. Kind of
I'm
like
seeing it here
with
Rich.
Right.
As soon as we started, it was a funny thing that kind of changed, because when you came in, your energy was great. I was like, okay, cool. I'm trying to figure this guy out. And then got those baby blues looking at me, staring me down.
And, be and careful.
Even you're right. I'm talking about the orgasm gnome, maybe. But in terms of listening as well, right, that's something I'm trying to put down, is listening is not hearing. Most people hear. And there's listening. And there's active listening, and there are tools we can learn in the same way that I'm not an active listening coach, right? But if I was to set that out, there would be a framework. And I remember being, so my mum's a therapist, and you get so much from that, you really do. But I remember volunteering at the Samaritans, which is a charity. It's a suicide helpline charity, and they literally give you like a slideshow presentation of like, this is what active listening really is. And I think even for me, as someone who had all those hours but didn't necessarily know what to do with it, going, that's why this works. This is how this works. These simple, helpful images. I've spoken a lot today because I appreciate it. And this, you guys are great. It feels like a space where I'm supposed to talk. But my whole life, like you said, Daniele, has been, I realize I get ahead if I put what I want to say on the back burner and go, oh yeah. You know, you're doing it genuinely too. That's the thing with Rich and Daniele and people I really get along with, you can see they're doing it genuinely. So that's an active skill, right? That's not easy to sell, not easy to explain, and very difficult to kind of pull off, because you need to be zen, you need to be in the moment for that person. But what's more practical for your career? What's going to earn more money? And even trying to get that as a framework to say to people, by the way, if you're really good at active listening and your energy's tight and you can tell stories, which again, I'm lucky with even dysfunctional, difficult things I had, great stories and good people around. If you can do that, you're going to earn more money. Suddenly, that's interesting.
Nothing better than good storytellers.
Right. Yep.
Oh. I'm afraid we are out of time.
Cool, my man. Let's wrap it up. Just to, I don't know, anything like podcast, social media, anything you want to throw out there for people to find you?
What I'd like to throw out is donate to the show. Make sure you follow these guys, keep ahead of them, because it's just so much effort goes into podcasts like this. It's 12 years, right?
Yeah, so only 8 more to our overnight success.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, I'll be waiting.
We're almost there.
I would say support things that you love. I think that'd be great. And if you enjoy songwriting, yeah, cool. Everyone knows how the internet works. Come and find me, come and say hello. But truly, this podcast is something special, and I've been able to meet you, Baby Blues here. I wanted to put the body to the voice, but also Pablo, shout out.
Yeah.
Looking forward, if you're listening to this,
that's awesome,
to hanging out and meeting you. And that's what that's also about, is sharing this moment. So thank you for having me as well.
No problem.
I've got old on your podcast. I'm 29. So
it's awesome.
Yeah, I love what you guys do. I love how you do it.
Well, the funky music beans one thing. It's the end of another fine episode of the Drunken Dallas Podcast.
Yes, indeed.
How about that?
Cool. On that note, hope you guys have a very good one and just enjoy your day.
Bye, everybody. Would you like to hear a terrible story?
Yes, always.
One day the rod shall teach you.
If you have time to criticize someone else, you have plenty of time to do something creative yourself. So what have we learned this week?
Be calm, be kind, be brave.
Yep, words to live by. See you guys. D-B-O-L-E-L-L-I.
Good shit.
R-I-C-H-I-M-O-N and the numeral one. And so ends another awesome episode of the Drunken Dallas Podcast. Be sure to keep your ears peeled for another mind-expanding episode coming soon. We'll be tweeting you as they come out. You can keep track of Daniele at D Bolelli. That's D-B-O-L-E-L-L-I. And you can find me on Twitter at RichieMon1. R-I-C-H-I-M-O-N and the numeral 1. We'll see y'all soon. Woo!